liberty locked down, please scan your barcode. Your liberty ain't gone, but yeah, it's on hold. Where did it come from and where did it go? It requires a fight, not tweeting from your phone. Don't need a king, get him off the fucking throne. If you're riding with the thought, you've always got a home. The virus is scared of, will come and it'll go. The government knows, just don't get treated like a hoe.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Liberty Lockdown. I have a very special guest with me today. His name is David Limbrick, and he is an Australian politician. And given the news in Australia as of late, specifically in Victoria, and you preside over Melbourne, is that correct?
Yeah, so I'm a state politician in the state of Victoria, in the upper house, which is like the state senate,
Yes, I think that the reason I was so anxious to have you on is because the way many Americans, including myself, are viewing Australia is kind of like our dystopic future if we don't prevail in this fight. And, you know, I care about Australians as well, but I also care about myself a whole heck of a lot. So I'm trying to figure out what's happening there, how it's happened, how we can fight and prevail against this incredible creeping tyranny globally. So let's start there. I mean, what has your experience been over the past 18 months? Are you as stunned by everything that's unfolded as I am?
Absolutely stunned. I'm a big believer in individual liberty, right? So to see the rights and liberties of Victorians destroyed so quickly and mercilessly over the last 18 months, and it's getting worse, is really upsetting to anyone that cares about freedom. I think back in March, it all sort of started. So I was first elected in 2018, I hadn't been in politics before. But then, in March last year, the pandemic became news and the government declared a state of emergency, right? So effectively what that does under our health legislation, the government has the ability to declare an emergency, which gives them special powers. Now, just only a few months prior to this, the government had declared another emergency due to bushfires, right? There was lots of fires in our state.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, so, and it was really disastrous. And the emergency powers they used then, they brought in the military to help evacuate people. It gives them the right to override property rights and things like that. And I think even libertarians would agree that in emergency situations, maybe to evacuate someone or to trespass on someone's property in an emergency, maybe that's valid. And actually we were okay with the way that the government used the emergency powers during the bushfire, right? We thought they were used responsibly. They ended them when the emergency was over, when the fires were out, and we didn't have a lot of concerns. Obviously we have concerns about emergency powers in general, because anyone who studied the history of emergency powers will know that that they're very dangerous things. So when the pandemic happened in March and the government declared an emergency, initially we said, yes, we're very concerned about the government using emergency powers, but we accept that it's an emergency. And the story was at the time, they need to lock down for 2 weeks to flatten the curve, right? Everyone's heard that now. And the story was that they needed to buy a bit of time to prepare the hospital system for the influx of patients, right? And to everyone, including us, that sounded reasonable at the time, right? So we didn't, it wasn't subject to a vote in Parliament. They could do it unilaterally. So we said, look, we're very concerned about the emergency powers, but we're not going to interfere with this. We're going to watch it very closely. What ended up happening was something very different. So what we expected was that they would need to buy a bit of time. They would ramp up the health system. Mm-hmm. And maybe if they needed something longer term, they would introduce some new legislation that would be voted on by Parliament. That's not what happened at all. The emergency powers have a limit of 6 months. So it was designed in the legislation that they can only run for 6 months. And after a few months, after they'd started doing lockdowns, they started doing, infringing on all sorts of liberties. And one of the things that they're meant to do in Victoria, we have what's called a a Charter of Human Rights. And this is meant to protect, you know, basic civil liberties, like the right to freedom of movement, the right to freedom of association, the right to peaceful assembly, et cetera, right?
Bill of Rights type
thing. It's sort of like a Bill of Rights, but it's not as, well, it's turned out to be, you know, pretty much a failure as far as I'm concerned. But,
right. Well, so is ours, if it makes you feel any better.
Yeah. In theory, it's actually quite a good thing, but it's, you know, it's been put to the test now, and I think it's failed.
Right.
But what they've got to do with these directions, so the emergency directions, which are done without parliamentary oversight, they're done by our chief health officer. So, you know, in Victoria, we have a chief health officer. I know in the US federally, you have, you know, Fauci. So let's consider it like the Victorian Fauci. Mm-hmm. They come out with these directions, right? And they've got extraordinary powers. But one of the things that they have to do is any of these directions have to weigh up the rights in that charter. But what they've done is they have done that apparently, this, they call it a human rights charter assessment, but it's all been secret. They haven't released any of it. So no one actually knows. It's not public knowledge on what are the moral calculations that they've done with regards to balancing these rights, right? So,
yeah. Well, why do you think, I mean, or do you know why it hasn't been made public? Is it under state secrets or something like that?
So there's been what we call a documents motion. So Parliament can pass motions to demand documents. I actually did one last week, which passed. And what that does is it demands of the government to release these documents. Mm-hmm. And when one of these motions was passed where they had a curfew, so we had a curfew, we still got a curfew now from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. I think it is, to release the documents. So the underlying medical advice and the human rights charter assessments, the government claimed executive privilege. So basically what that means is that they say, you know, it's not in the public interest to release this, which I, of course, totally disagree with.
Yeah.
It's very much in the public interest.
Yeah.
So we've been on this journey. So initially what happened was they locked down really hard last year and they eliminated COVID, right? We got rid of it. Like they closed the borders, they closed the state borders, which is another constitutional issue. You're not meant to close borders, but apparently they can get away with that. They closed the borders, they locked down really hard, they traced all the cases, and we got to zero, right? There was no transmissions and no cases. And they called those, you know, they made this big deal about it. It was like a sort of cult thing. They were calling it donut days, you know, because zero is like a donut, right?
Right, right.
And they're saying, yay, we got rid of coronavirus. It's, you know, we've defeated it. And they sort of got this hubris, I think, that, you know, through public health measures, they could defeat the virus, and a lot of people bought that. And, you know, occasionally the virus would re-enter the state and they'd you know, lock down again and defeat it, right? And So they've done this. We're in lockdown 6 at the moment, and we've been locked down now for longer than anywhere in the world. So I think over the last 18 months it's like, I don't know, 230 something days and counting. To give you an idea of what a lockdown is, you're only allowed to leave your home if for a set number of reasons. You're allowed to leave your home to buy essential supplies. You're allowed to leave your home to get exercise. You're allowed, I think it's 3 hours a day at the moment. You're allowed to leave your home if you're an authorized worker. So you need work permits if you're going to work. Members of Parliament are authorized workers. You know, if you work in a supermarket or a, you know, meat processing facility or clinic or whatever, you're allowed to leave home to get medical care or to provide medical care, and you're allowed to leave home to get a vaccine, right? That's it, basically. I think now you're allowed to go out and meet someone in the park. We've also got a curfew, which runs from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m., anyone outside of curfew gets a $5,000 fine or $1,800. I don't know. It's a huge fine anyway. Yeah. I have trouble keeping up with the rules myself. it's crazy, the number of rules. And There, you're not allowed to travel. Initially, was you weren't allowed to travel more than 5 kilometers from your home. Mm-hmm. We've been granted some more freedoms by our overlords to be able to travel 15 kilometers from our home now. So that's wonderful. We can go shopping or go to a park within 15 kilometers of our home.
They're such benevolent rulers.
Yeah. It's just crazy. But more recently, and children aren't allowed to go to school. They haven't gone to school for a long time now. And the harms that this has caused in both to children and to the psychological harm to the population, I think is probably it's unlike anything I've ever seen. Like it's absolutely catastrophic. I think what they're doing to children is it's criminal. They're essentially sacrificing the welfare of an entire generation of children by doing this. And you know, I've got 3 kids myself. My eldest son has spent his first and second year of, in America, it would be like junior high school. Mm-hmm. So he spent that basically most of that at home. Now, you know, most kids when they start high school, you know, they're meeting new friends, they're learning, you know, they're meeting their new teachers, you know, they're doing sports and you know, all the normal stuff that kids have to do to develop themselves. Kids haven't done that. You know, they've spent all their time in front of Zoom meetings.
Right.
You know, they've only gone to school for a few months out of the last 2 years, really. And it's horrible. And, you know,
I've read that the suicide rates have doubled in Melbourne. Is that, I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the figures, but.
Yeah. So suicide rates haven't jumped dramatically, but what has jumped dramatically is, and it's off the scale, is emergency department presentations for self-harm, including children.
That's what it was. My mistake. Yes.
Yeah. So there's been a massive increase in self-harm presentations, both in children and in adults. And the stories that have come into my office are absolutely horrific. Now, you know, I spoke about my own kids before, but you've got to consider that my kids are probably in the best situation that you could imagine. You know, they've got a loving husband and wife. Dad's still got a job. Mum's at home looking after them. That's in the best situation possible. So many people have lost their jobs. Mum and dad are in, you know, stressful situations. You know, I'm lucky enough that I live in a house, right? Mm-hmm. But lots of people live in apartments. Can you imagine living in an apartment, you know, with kids? It's not normal for kids to spend most of their life in locked in a house with their brothers and sisters and their mum and dad, right? It's not, you know, and you can also imagine for single parents or divorced couples, you can imagine how horrific that is. For only children who don't have brothers and sisters, like they're basically isolated from contact with other kids. Kids with special needs, like you know, they might have you know, autism spectrum disorder or other needs. You can imagine how difficult that is, or they're disabled in some way. This is very, very difficult situation for them.
It's tragic. Yeah. I mean, even with the autism spectrum folks, or the children in particular, the mask mandates in particular are very challenging for them, because it's like they don't understand what's going on. I mean, obviously some of them do, some of them don't, but I mean, it's just catastrophic. And to, you know, correlate what's occurring in America, we've had pockets of a very similar lockdown to what you're describing. I fled California recently because California in many areas was very similar to this level of lockdown. It was never, I mean, at periods, it was as severe as what you're describing, but for the most part, that was very short-lived. And like we basically just started to go back on the street. What stunned me about the story in Australia is that, and I've had someone else on my show, his name's Liberty Down Under. He's anonymous because he doesn't want people to know who he is. But the way he described it is that the people actually want this to be a harder lockdown, that they are upset that COVID is back, that you're not having those donut days anymore, and that they actually are the ones rooting on the government to be harsher and to mandate this. Is that your experience? Because that to me, you know, maybe it's just my American sensibilities, but that was truly stunning when he said that.
Yeah, it's certainly a thing. There's certainly a large proportion of the population, disappointingly, I suppose, that would be pushing for even harder restrictions. You know, a lot of people sort of like this. I mean, what's happened in our society is we've become, the social fabric has been torn apart, right?
Yes.
What you've ended up with, so in Victoria, we've got like a real sort of hard left government is in power at the moment. And what's happened is really, I've described it as a new class system. So you've got the laptop class. So these are people that can work from home. They're still getting their paychecks. They can basically get by, right? But then on the other side, you've got this sort of group of people who, you know, they're people like small business owners. They're people, worried about their kids. They're people who might have lost their job because they're not an essential worker. So all of these people, and they're basically living on welfare, forced onto welfare, not through their own choice.
Right.
And they're mad. They're wild. They're really upset. And it's gotten worse and worse because, you know, like you can imagine running a restaurant, like the current occupancy rate in the city of Melbourne, to give you an idea of the economic devastation that we're talking about, the occupancy rate is 9% at the moment.
If you are at risk of losing your job due to vaccine mandates or otherwise, or if you are simply just discontented with your work position and you want to get a better financial foothold to look after your family for whatever tumult is in our pathway, you have an opportunity right now to go to crash.co/daily to sign up for the Daily Job Hunt newsletter. It is a free once daily email newsletter that hits your inbox every morning that'll give you some information on how to be the better applicant for those jobs out there. And there are millions of opened, unaddressed jobs that you could apply for right away. And if you have an employer that's considering mandating the vaccine and you don't want to get it for bodily autonomy purposes, medical privacy purposes, if you do want to get it and you just don't want to tell them, I respect it. Whatever way you want to go with this, I totally respect your decision, but this is your best opportunity to get on that better path right now. Again, go to crash.co/daily to sign up. 9% of commercial properties have...
Yeah, commercial property.
Wow.
So that's all commercial property. The occupancy rate's only 9%. So if you walk around the city, it's the most depressing thing that you'll ever see. There's police signs everywhere. It's just, you know, and, you know, like... In between lockdowns, there was periods where restaurants opened and things like that. And of course, everyone wants to go out to a restaurant. So, you know, I'd have situations where, you know, you're not allowed to visit friends and stuff. So, you know, I'd go out to buy some takeaway or something with staff, right? You know, because they're the only people that I'm allowed to meet. You know, you'd recommend a restaurant to, you'd say, oh, let's go to this restaurant. Haven't been there for ages. And then you go there and they're gone. Like right. they're, you know, there's one that I really like, Korean barbecue. And you know, we went to this Korean restaurant and, you know, there's chains on the door. It's all dusty and dark inside. There's letters under the door. Like they're just gone. Right. And, yeah. And you can't even recommend a restaurant anymore because you don't know if they're still open.
Of course, yeah. I mean, we've had similar. It's much much lesser extent, but I've seen probably in many areas of San Diego and LA, you know, like half of the buildings turned over. You know, where some of them went out of business, maybe they got replaced. Some of them are still vacant. It's catastrophic, and it's a global dynamic where, you know, I'm very nervous because basically what we're doing is we are creating an economic black hole. And we are filling it with paper money. I mean, that's what we're doing. And they're not even considering production. You know, you have all of, particularly you were talking about the you know, the blue collar guys that like actually go out and do jobs in the field, and they can't, because they're not prioritized, they can't go out and do those jobs. You have a huge shortage of inventory of all sorts of, like a litany of supplies across the globe. And and it seems as if we are setting ourselves up for a major economic catastrophe. Have you, is there any concern about that amongst the political class in your world?
Oh, look, there's a lot of concern.
Okay, good.
The rate of debt that we're racking up is incredible, both at a state and federal level in Australia. I think Australia's probably in some ways a lot better positioned than lots of other countries. Our debt pre-pandemic wasn't crazy. I mean, it was, you know, it was bigger than I'd like, but it wasn't like American or Japanese debt, right? Which is just insane.
Right.
We also, you know, we can print money, but we're not America in that, you know, we're not a global reserve currency, right?
Sure.
So we can't just go crazy doing that either. So we were probably more, you know, fiscally responsible than what the Americans have been. But, you know, we've been racking up debt at an incredible rate over the last 18 months, both at a federal and state level.
Sure.
And yes, I have serious concerns about, you know, what are the long-term consequences of this? You know, we were saying before about the kids and what we've done to them. We're not only harming their childhood, we're also handing them a bill to pay off for the rest of their life, right? So,
indeed.
I mean, you know, morally here, what we're doing is
unconscionable.
Horrific. Yeah, it's unconscionable.
I mean, it truly is. And this is what, I mean, what concerns me about this is your story is so similar to what we've experienced here. And it's so similar to, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people in different parts of the world, and the story is basically the same all across the board. It beggars belief that this happened by coincidence, that everyone responded in the same ways, the 15 days, the Build Back Better, the language is all so similar. Are there people that are advising, you know, local politicians on these steps to take, that like, I'm just trying to understand how it all came down from a top down type fashion, and everyone in lockstep did the same, in my opinion, completely crazy thing. If it's not, you know, your wheelhouse, by no means do you have to answer this question, but that's the gnawing question in my soul. It's like, how did this happen?
Well, they didn't all do it the same way though. You know, there was a bunch of countries that did things quite differently. So, you know, Sweden
True.
Was one.
Yes.
Japan was another. They did things quite differently. So there was a number of countries that did things quite differently. But I think, you know, I don't think it was like, you know, any sort of external control. I think it's like a herding effect. You know, like if you've got, if you hand over power to bureaucrats who are going to be sort of very conservative, right? Because, you know, they don't want to get blamed, right? So they look around at what people are doing around the world, and they sort of just follow each other on this sort of conservative way of dealing with it. And they think, you know, that they're sort of doing the right thing by taking these extreme measures. Now, there were some outliers. You know, Sweden initially was lambasted and demonized because they took a different path, and I think in hindsight they were very wise. They made some mistakes.
Sure.
You know, I think they said openly that their biggest mistake was that they should have isolated elderly people better than what they did, because they were the most vulnerable.
Right.
And that was their sort of main mistake. But apart from that, you know, they're back to normal now, right? But it's all over as far as they're concerned. And
yeah, most
Denmark,
of the
Norway, yeah, a lot exactly. of those Scandinavian countries, that they did a pretty good job. As well in Japan, I'm quite familiar with Japan because my family's from, my wife and in-laws are all from Japan, and I used to live there. So we've been following very closely. Japan didn't use many mandates at all. They relied on sort of voluntary compliance. So, you know, like
novel ideas.
Yeah, like with masks in Australia, right? They said for ages, oh, they don't do anything, they don't do anything. Then they said, oh, well, they're mandatory now in Victoria. And if you don't wear it, you're going to get a fine. In Japan, right from the start, they had public education campaigns saying, here's what masks can do, here's what they're good for, here's what they're not good for. And, you know, here's the situations where they might be useful. We'll leave it up to your discretion. And they sent everyone masks in the mail. I mean, and they you know, that's fine, right? Like, yeah. I didn't see a problem with that. Similarly, they didn't have lockdowns. They did close the schools for a little bit, but it was like a couple of months. And I think some local areas close schools if there's an outbreak or something. But and there's also local ordinances on, you know, you have to close your business at a certain time or something. But I mean, generally, there's been very few restrictions on liberty in Japan. And that you know, like, people might criticize them and whatever, but I think that they've managed it in a fairly, in a way that is respectful of the rights of their population, and you know, done it in a pretty good way. Like, I wish we had have done a lot more like that as well. Yeah, another thing is the death rate in Japan has been quite low. There's a lot of people, you know, compared to the number of people that have actually caught the disease. There's a lot of speculation on why that might be the case. I don't have the answers on that. I'm sure there'll be lots of PhDs, lots of university scholars, academics looking at the reasons why that is. But, you know,
sure. I mean, it could be as simple as you know, body mass index and diet.
Well, I mean, that's my suspicion. I mean, one of the things that you notice if you go to Japan is there's not many obese people. And
exactly.
And obesity is a well-known factor in whether coronavirus turns out to be, you know, fatal. A serious issue for you. It's one of the risk factors. But so all of this has been progressing, and it's only been getting worse. And so what happened a few weeks ago was the government started mandating vaccines, right? So the very first industry that they mandated it for was aged care, which may make sense. I mean, aged care workers, as part of their employment contracts, already have to take a series of vaccines. So it's arguable that, you know, maybe that's a reasonable condition of employment. There wasn't much of a fuss about that. But then they went to construction workers. Now, construction is one of the few industries that was able to continue during the pandemic, you know, heavily unionized industry. I think the government was worried about, you know, union action if they shut it down. So they had sort of strict safety protocols and stuff and said, you know, you're going to continue working. But what ended up happening is that compliance was pretty bad. And there was lots of outbreaks in the construction sector. And so what they did a few weeks ago is they said, right, we're going to mandate vaccines in the construction sector. And basically they said, you know, you get a vaccine within a couple of weeks or you're not coming on the site. In fact, it will be an offence if someone comes on site who isn't vaccinated, and it will be an offence if the employer doesn't collect the medical details of workers. Mm-hmm. Now, many of the unions all along had been saying that they don't support mandatory vaccination. They support, you know, helping workers get vaccinated, and they encourage their members to get vaccinated, but they didn't support mandatory vaccination. However, what happened is the main construction union didn't fight the government on this. And what happened was there was a whole bunch of construction workers a few weeks ago went down to the union office to essentially what they were trying to do was to protest at their own union to say, you know, you've got to stick up for us. And they were trying to force the union bosses to, you know, march on parliament and take action against the government to stop them doing this. And the union bosses didn't take action, and they went wild. And I actually went down there to witness what was going on because, you know, I don't trust our government when they talk about things, and I don't trust the media reporting on things. So one of the things that I've been doing during the pandemic is actually, and I think I'm the only member of parliament that's actually been doing it, is going along to protests and witnessing what's going on, right? Because if I don't go along, I'm worried that people won't know the truth.
Sure.
And that, you know, because they lie, right?
Yeah.
And so when I went to this protest, I went and talked to lots of the union members and listened to what they're upset about. And yeah, they're upset that the union had been talking about they supported voluntary vaccination, and yet the union wasn't fighting the government on this, and they wanted them to fight. And the union basically refused to help them, and they just went wild and they started smashing the windows and
that video went viral in America too. We saw
was insane, right? Like, yeah. I've never seen anything like it, but they were mad. They were really upset. And the government and the media started calling them. They said, oh well, they're not really construction workers, they're fake construction. They started, and all their apparatchiks started putting these hashtags on social media, fake tradies and stuff. Like, tradies means a tradesman. So they're saying they're actually not really union members. They're not really tradespeople. They're actually, you know, right-wing extremists and Nazis. That's what they started saying. Like, it's the most crazy thing that you've ever heard.
Has that been a continuing narrative in your country as well? Because in America...
They basically, any opposition, they smear them. Like, anyone who's been questioning this, they either smear them as a conspiracy theorist,
right,
or a right-wing extremist or Nazi, morally reprehensible, sure, insane.
I've been called all of those things over the past 18 months.
Yeah, and of course, like, they've tried to smear me as well, like, you know, saying, you know, I'm an extremist or I want to just let it rip. But, you know, I'm just, like, defending basic civil liberties here, right? I'm not calling for anything. Like, right. I don't know. Like, I think the fact that people that are defending basic civil liberties are being called extremists says a lot about what's going on, right?
That shows exactly how extreme this situation is, that we are viewed in that way.
All I'm doing is questioning the limitations on, you know, the right to peaceful assembly, the right to freedom of movement, the right to work, the right to participate in public life. Like, you know, these are very, very basic civil liberties that, you know, I thought were the foundation of Western civilization, and they've just been totally trampled. And anyone that defends them, they call them a Nazi of all things. Like, I mean, it's just insane, right? Like, you know,
it's not as if
the Nazis were well known for defending civil liberties. Like, it's just the most crazy thing ever. And
yeah, so we're actually acting as anti-fascists, which is the ironic part, because oftentimes they'll refer to us as being fascists, and it's like, what are you even talking about? And then simultaneously, you have this combination of big business and government working together to implement vaccine mandates and things of that nature, and I'm like, that is actual fascism. And if I point it out, you call me a fascist. It's crazy. The whole world's upside
down. I've
been
calling it, like, biofascism, what they're doing.
So. Yes, there you go.
But it's... So when they mandate the vaccines, I think, you know, from a libertarian point of view, and, like, just from a basic human rights point of view, what's going on is they're overriding consent. And I think this is a really serious issue because, you know, under our international human rights law, under our human rights charter in Victoria, and even under our immunization guidelines, it states very clearly that... vaccines must be voluntary, and in order for consent to be legally valid, and it says this in our federal government guidelines on vaccination, in order for consent to be legally valid, it must be free from pressure, coercion, or undue manipulation. And I think anyone that knows anything about consent would know that that's a reasonable thing, right? And anyone that cares about consent should know that, you know, putting a gun to someone's head invalidates consent, right? I mean, this is very basic ethics, I think.
Yes.
Those
passages are pulled almost verbatim from the Nuremberg Code. Like, this is what we learned these lessons from World War I and II, and this is why we have these hard and fast principles that we do not allow this stuff to happen. So it's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, and, you know, we've seen throughout history, what happens when governments can conduct medical procedures without proper consent. I mean, you know, there's lots of cases in the 20th century, but I mean, even more recently, you know, you've seen in China, you know, they've had, you know, forced sterilizations. There's been stories of organ harvesting, like all these sorts of things. Like, right, this is the sort of thing that, you know, a free society should outright reject as unconscionable.
Yes.
And I thought that we had rejected it. I thought that our laws protected us, and I was wrong. You can tell I'm pretty disappointed in our institutions. Yes. It's pretty hard.
Well, not just the institutions, but the culture globally too. I mean, I have had probably the hardest year and a half of my life because I had, you know, all my preconceived notions and faith in the American people, freedom loving people globally, that this would never be allowed. And, I was wrong too. I mean, this is a harsh awakening to some realities that I think many of us didn't want to look at.
Yeah, look, but there are people who there's people that have been defending liberty all along.
Absolutely.
And there's more people now waking up to, you know, what's going on.
Certainly. Yeah, no, I'm very hopeful. Don't let that.
Yeah, I'm optimistic too in the long term, but in the short term, yeah, we're in dark times. So there's no doubt about it. I've said many times that the people who appreciate liberty the most are those that have lost it. And at the moment, everyone in Australia has lost it to some degree. Victorians have lost it more than anyone, I think. But we're getting into really dangerous territory now. So, you know, I spoke about those emergency powers. They're only meant to run for 6 months. So at the end of that 6 months, there was a huge fight to extend it. We opposed it because we thought that they weren't being used responsibly. And in a transparent manner, we weren't satisfied that the limitations on rights were justified. And so we opposed it very, very strongly. It was a massive fight. Then there was another extension that happened this year. Earlier this year. And it's been extended until December. So we're talking 21 months of emergency powers. And then at December, the government has indicated that they're going to come up with some sort of permanent pandemic legislation. We don't know what that looks like. They haven't made it public. They haven't released what their plans are exactly, but there's been news reports about it. Now, you know how I said before about there's authorized workers, right? So, you know, they started off mandating vaccines for aged care workers and healthcare workers. You know, arguably that might form part of their employment conditions anyway. But then when you get into construction, it's getting really iffy. And then now they've done it for all authorized workers, which, you know, includes people working at supermarket, includes, you know, truck drivers, includes everyone who's been able to work to some degree, basically has to be vaccinated or lose their job or not be allowed onto the work premises. They actually haven't stated that you have to be sacked because I think there's legal issues with that. So they've said you're not allowed onto the work, but for all intents and purposes, you can't work, right?
Yes.
But they've also done it for members of parliament. We're authorized workers. And so that includes me, of course. And last night, so you're one of the first people in the world to hear about this. So I hope you tell the world about it.
I will indeed.
We're going to do our best to tell the world about it. So what they've done is they've sent around a thing after Parliament finished last night. Parliament's going to be sitting again next week. They're going to be putting through a motion in Parliament to exclude members of Parliament who either aren't vaccinated or refuse to hand over their medical details. And what that will do is it will basically prevent them from voting and prevent them from participating in Parliament and going to their offices and all that sort of stuff until February next year. Conveniently for the government, that's also when they want to pass this permanent legislation, which they know full well that we will be opposing. So my colleague, so there's two members of the Liberal Democrats, where I said before, we're basically a libertarian party. There's two of us. We've publicly stated that initially, we didn't reveal our vaccination status because we thought it was no one's business, basically. But eventually, we did reveal our vaccination status. We have been fully vaccinated, but we said publicly that we're not going to hand over our medical details to Parliament. We think that denying elected representatives the ability to vote on bills based on, you know, medical procedures dictated by the government is abhorrent, and we're not going to comply. So that means that from next Friday, presuming that this motion passes Parliament, that means that we will be prevented from entering Parliament, we'll be prevented from voting, and all that sort of stuff. So that's, that's just hitting the news today.
This basically amounts to, you know, monopolizing their power structure, where, you know, anyone who's a political dissident like yourself will no longer be able to push back. You won't even be able to vote against it, even if you weren't allowed to talk out about it. So, I mean, this is horrific. I mean,
yeah, it's pretty serious stuff. I'm not aware of any precedent throughout history of doing this sort of thing in anywhere, any country. It's pretty extreme stuff.
It is. I mean, is there any hope that you guys can defeat this motion?
I don't know. Like the government in the upper house in the Senate, they need. So we've got a bicameral system, so a lower and upper house, right? So in the lower house, it's controlled by the government. So they can basically just pass whatever they want in the lower house, but it'll only affect the members of the lower house. In the upper house, the government doesn't control it. They need 3 votes. So we've got 40 members in our upper house. The government needs 3 votes to pass legislation or motions or whatever. What they've relied on in the past is we've got a very large, what we call a crossbench, so smaller parties and independents such as myself, they've relied on getting, you know, 3 of those to join forces with the government. And so we've got, you know, 3 minor parties that are basically, you know, hard left sort of parties that have joined with the government to do this sort of stuff. Now, if we're taken out of the picture, they copped a lot of heat for that, by the way. They, like, the population turned on them, like they were mad, like you know, like they've had to withdraw from social media and stuff because like they're just getting so much heat, right?
Great.
Now they won't have to necessarily support the government if we pull out of this, like if we're prevented from voting, it'll make it much easier for the government.
Of course. I mean, they could basically do whatever they want at that point because you guys are the only ones that have been you know, pushing back against this.
There's been others pushing back against it too. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So it's like they only in that part in the upper house in Parliament, the extensions to the state of emergency only passed with the support of 3 extra members.
Oh wow!
Like, so everyone else opposed it. Yeah, everyone else opposed it. Like it only passed by 1 vote.
Wow.
So.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. So are these same vaccine mandates being applied through like kindergarten through 12th grade? Like, because that's happening in California currently, and New York is
not yet.
Places. Okay.
Not yet.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're encouraging it. There's no mandates yet. They have mandated school teachers.
Okay.
But children, they haven't mandated yet. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if they do it.
Of course, yeah. Time will tell. I mean, do you have the same sort of like FDA approval process that we do?
Yeah, so we have TGA, which is sort of like the FDA, okay. Therapeutic Goods Administration. Yeah, it's a similar sort of thing. They analyze and approve drugs and things very similar to the FDA. Okay. So yeah,
the reason I ask is because Governor Newsom, who's the governor in California, came out and said, we are mandating this for K-12 as soon as the FDA gives approval. So he is actually front running the FDA's approval for children of the vaccine. And he's just saying, as soon as they give approval, it is mandated to all the kids here. I mean, it's just so aggressive. I mean, it's really stunning that even without the science being known as to efficacy or safety or anything else for the children, he's still saying, as soon as we get that approval, here we go. Everyone's got to take it. And on top of that, there are people that are, you know, college students and things of that nature that are being mandated to take it, regardless of the fact that they are not even allowed to go to campus. I mean, this is bizarre. Like they have kids that are doing mobile education or you know, telecommuting doing what we're doing now through Zoom, and they have to, you know, have the vaccine in order to continue with their classes.
I read about that. Yeah.
I mean, it's astonishing. And is it the similar thing with you that you would not be allowed to vote even if you were to do it, you know, by not being present? Because it seems as if that could be worked around.
Well, it is possible to have remote participation in Parliament. However, you can't vote because there's constitutional issues around voting. So, okay. Yeah, it's pretty complicated. But basically, due to the Victorian state constitution, it's difficult to have a legally valid vote without people actually in the chamber. There is a constitutional problem.
I've got a few other big questions from the prior guest I had. He made it sound as if unvaccinated people would not be able to leave Australia at all for multiple years. Is that correct?
Possibly. Yeah. So
how could they even justify that you're not allowed to leave? I mean, wouldn't you want the people that aren't getting the vaccine to leave if this is your whole mission is to?
Yeah, you're not allowed to leave now. Like, you need a permit to leave the country. We're one of the few countries in the world where you need a permit to exit the country.
Yeah. What's the justification there? Do you know?
I think the reason is there's many people, many Australians who are trapped overseas and they can't get back into the country because of limitations on entering, and they don't want to add to that, I think, is the reason. But I think there's lots of people that just want to leave permanently and they're not allowed to go either.
I know. I mean, this is that gets into like really dangerous territory where you have political dissidents that you're basically mandating that they can't earn a living. They can't do what they do professionally. Their children are also, you know, being tormented because you guys have these really draconian measures and they aren't allowed to leave the country. I mean, those are the types of things that start revolutions. I mean, that really is like what it's happened historically, is that if you get that totalitarian, people start to become violent. And you saw it with the tradies a couple of weeks ago. And it's like,
It started off with the tradies, but then it got bigger. Like, you would have seen, like, the protest wasn't just one day. It sort of went on for a week. And
right.
Yeah, but I mean, well, you got to keep in mind that, you know, United States may as well be Mars as far as Australia is concerned. Like, it's probably easier to get to Mars than United States. you know, like, we're happy that we can go 15 kilometers from our house instead of 5, right? And we're not, you know, and leaving your house to get on a plane isn't a valid reason to leave your home. Like, well,
I apologize for laughing, but man.
No, yeah. Well, no. Well, if you don't laugh, you cry, right?
Like, exactly.
I mean, you know, like we can laugh, and, you know, I laugh about it too, because that's the only way I keep sane. But this is pretty dire stuff that we're talking about. You know, I'm not sugarcoating any of this. Like, it's, you know, and they talk about this roadmap that they've got to get out of it. But the roadmap, so the state government, I've got to say as well, different states in Australia have all managed this differently, right? So Victoria's managed it in a really, really authoritarian way. West Australia has basically had hardly any virus throughout the entire pandemic, and they've become a hermit kingdom. So they're saying, oh, we're free, just as long as you don't want to leave or come in or cross the state borders. They've sort of just isolated themselves from the world. And, you know, that's worked, but clearly it can't go on forever. Clearly they've got to face reality sooner or later.
Right.
But, I mean, Victoria never had that option. Like, one of our biggest, you know, we're very large numbers of immigrants in Victoria, right? Very high immigrant population, very large numbers of dual citizens. Our biggest export industry in Victoria was foreign students, like education. So we've got a very large university sector, which is totally, you know, not totally, but very much shut down at the moment.
I would imagine.
You know, and they keep talking as if they're coming back, but I'm not sure that's actually going to happen.
So how does this play out? I mean, we're really like, what?
Yeah, well, the roadmap doesn't include freedom as the endpoint. The roadmap is like a segregated society. They're talking about, you know, whether or not you can participate in the economy would depend on your vaccination status. So, you know, they're predicting about 90% of people will get the vaccine. So that means we're going to have like 10% of the population, roughly, that will become a new underclass.
Medical apartheid. I mean,
yeah, it's medical apartheid, like basically is what it is. And they're saying, you know, you can't go into pubs. You can't, you know, you can't go to the pub and have a drink. You can't go to events. You can't work in most professions. You can't.
And you can't leave.
You probably can't leave. And it doesn't, they're not saying in Victoria when that's actually going to finish. I don't know. Like, and it's not just people who haven't got the vaccine. Like there's other people who, you know, for reasons of principle, you know, like myself, who will just refuse to comply with handing over their medical details because they think that, you know, this is a personal decision that shouldn't be, you know, it should be any sort of medical stuff should be a decision between a person and their doctor, right? It shouldn't be the state intervening in that and forcing things. And, you know, there'll be some people that won't comply with it for those reasons. And, you know, that we're going to have this new underclass. And, you know, when there was those riots, or, you know, the big protests a few weeks ago, and, you know, they spiraled out of control because it's illegal to protest as well. And of course, anyone that organizes a protest will be arrested for incitement, which is a very serious crime. So the protests are totally unorganized. They're just spontaneous. Like people just hit the streets, right? And you can imagine how out of control that gets. I mean, I've been to lots of protests and usually, you know, there's organizers trying to, you know, keep their messaging and make sure people behave in themselves and, you know, not going crazy. But when you've just got masses of people hitting the streets, totally out of control, of course, things get wild, right? And but what was happening, there was an amazing scene where there was some guy, the police response has just been crazy. I'm sure you've seen the footage. You know, they've been shooting at protesters and, you know, they've got the stormtroopers and all that sort of stuff. It's just insane. But there's all these people in a quite expansive area of Melbourne in their balconies, and they were cheering on the police chasing down one of the protesters. And I thought it was so emblematic. I said, you know, this is the laptop class, you know, cheering on the oppression of the new underclass. You know, this poor guy was just running around getting chased by stormtroopers, and people were like standing on their balconies and clapping at their fellow citizens being oppressed. Like, it's evil what they've done to our social fabric, and I don't know how we recover from this. But what I'm hoping is that people will start to realize that maybe defending the traditional, you know, civil liberties that we've had is important, and they'll see why it's important because they realize what's happened when it's lost.
Yes.
Certainly we've seen a lot of support for us. You know, traditionally we're a very minor party, and we're growing in support just because people, you know, we've been around for 20 years, right? And all we've ever done is exist to defend the liberties of Australians, right? That's our whole political objective. And people are saying, you know, oh, wow, my liberty's gone. I wonder who's defending it. And, you know, we're there. So that's sort of what's happened there.
Well, let me commend you for having the courage to, you know, withhold demonstrating evidence of your vaccination status. You don't have to do that because you have been vaccinated and you're doing it out of principle. I think that's just as, you know, courageous as not getting it. And just be, you know, to stand in unison with your, basically your new underclass. I intend to do the same here. I think that really the biggest message I've been pushing as of late is that we need to stop complying with this madness, and, you know, peacefully, ideally, and let's stay optimistic, but also stay vigilant, because I really believe that if we don't turn the tide on this thing, we're going to end up in a very dark place. So thank you so much for coming on, David. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Everybody go follow him. He is at underscore David Limbrick on Twitter. Any other points of contact?
Yeah, so if you just search for David Limbrick on Facebook or Instagram, I'm there too. So yeah.
Great. Well, David is the MP for the Liberal Democrats in Victoria, and he is one of my heroes now. So thank you so much for coming on, David. It was a blast.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up on Liberty Lockdown, it's going to be wild, folks. Check this lineup out. On Monday, Adam Curry, the great host of the No Agenda podcast, the podfather himself, the originator of basically podcasting as a whole. What a treat. I can't believe I get to talk to him. Then the next day, Julia Song. The following day, Josh Denny. The next week, Ian Crossland of Timcast. Then we got Jessica Vaughn, Matt Kibbe, Zuby, Louis J. Gomez, Sour Patch Lids, and Eric D. July. My God. If you want to support this program, please go to libertylockdown.locals.com and become a supporting member of our crew there. It would be a huge help, and with those resources, I intend to invest all of that capital into creating a world-class studio where I can have guests, these incredible people, in person someday soon, potentially. So that's your opportunity to do that. Oh, and did I mention Dave Rubin? Dave Rubin's coming on. Goodness gracious. What a time to be alive. Despite all of the insanity going on, I get to talk to some of the smartest people on the planet, and I am thrilled to be doing what I'm doing, even though the world's melting down, and I couldn't have done it without you. So thank you again. If you want to support the show, you can also go to Twitter, subscribe to me, or follow me, rather. It is at Liberty Lock Pod, and on Instagram, Liberty Lock Down.
Big shout out to everybody that's been with me since Jump Street. Appreciate y'all.
Welcome to Liberty Lockdown. Please scan your barcode. Your liberty ain't gone, but yeah, it's on hold. Where did it come from and where did it go? It requires a fight, not tweeting from your phone. Don't need a king, get him off the fucking throne. If you're riding with the thought, you've always got a home. The virus you're scared of will come and it'll go. The government knows, just don't get treated like a hoe.
Like Nico and Shane, you're probably wondering what's happening. Scared Hollywood lefties lyrical feppening. A typo with Luke might bring them nooses. We all bite the bullet, I'm the king of the gooses. Freckles and Brit, didn't know I could spit. Knew I was a patriot, but now I'm the shit. Peter Quinones, invite me on. Which podcaster sends custom songs? Part of the problem, now I stand with the people. Dave showed the way, but I am unequal. Lions of Liberty, now hear me roar. Beat running out, but I got a bit more. Robbie the Fire, always running his mouth, but I made him a sandwich, now I'm man of the house. The malice for Nick, but you're welcome to quit. I went over BLM with the fire I spit. Friends against government just call us fags. Copied the Cairo, put mummies in the bag. Liable opinions get thrown on the ground. Silky Smooth Tom was the only sound. Getting so hot, must be Air July. Screaming in the mic, you rip for 59. Miles to Ray showed that black guns matter. Now all these lefties got crazy small bladders. None of us wanted war, but we're ready. You know I be bopping and rock steady.
Liberty Lockdown, please scan your barcode. Your liberty ain't gone, but yeah, it's on hold. Where did it come from and where did it go? It requires a fight, not tweeting from your phone. Don't need a king, get him off the fucking throne. If you're riding with the thought, you've always got a home. The virus you're scared of will come and it'll go. The government knows, just don't get treated like a hoe.